I'm Silvahara Pettion. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.
Okay, so let me just put it to you this way. If you open the dictionary and you look up the word hustle, you might see his face first and then see my face next.
I'm John Henry. At 18, I started my first company. And within 2 years, I successfully sold that company.
What I prayed for, I said, please give me all the problems that come with having this thing.
Hello, everybody. I'm Silvahara Pettion, and thank you for joining us for another conversation. With me today is John Henry, and I am so excited about talking to him in this conversation because he is just a wealth of knowledge, even though he's super young.
I'm John Henry. At 18, I started my first company, and within 2 years, I successfully sold that company.
But that has nothing to do with it. Age has nothing to do with wisdom. It's all about experience, and that, I think, is part of his story. Now, if you don't know John Henry, and if you're not following him on social media, I suggest you do, because the content that he creates is really impactful and helpful to life and business and entrepreneurship.
No matter what business you're in, if you want to succeed, it all comes down to the hustle.
So I feel like we have a kinship based on the fact that hustle is our middle name. I'm going to continue to introduce him throughout this conversation and talk about some of his accomplishments, but I want to jump right into talking to him. One of the first things that I want to talk about is how important being an immigrant is to the factor of a new level of hustle that you and I know and understand. So thank you for joining us and talk to us a little bit about that mindset that seems to be instilled in us and run in our veins, whether we like it or not.
I love it. No, thank you for having me. It's really a great honor. I've been looking forward to connecting with you for a little while. So what better time than now? So yeah, no, you nailed it on the head. I mean, being an immigrant or a first generation born immigrant is just so crucial and formative to my DNA. And when I did a little bit of research on this, because I did a podcast episode with eBay focused around immigrant entrepreneurship and like what the correlation is, and a healthy percentage of Fortune 500 companies are started by immigrant CEOs, including founder eBay, Pierre Omidyar, who's from Iran, and Jobs, who hails from Syrian parents, and just runs the gamut. So I think what it is you come here and you just don't take the opportunity for granted. And not that American citizens do, because I think that the American spirit is alive and healthy in terms of like wanting to be prosperous and upwardly mobile. But I do think that when you come from elsewhere in, you are acutely aware of the situation outside of the States and how, there isn't necessarily an equal playing ground. And then if we were to zoom into America, obviously we're going through, severe racial tensions. And, I think in a lot of ways, for sure, there are systemic disadvantages for communities of color. And so, being an immigrant and then coming in here, you have to deal with those realities. But even still, right? Like, I remember I used to protest the flag when I was in school. My mom damn near slapped me. And she was like, John, if you only knew that I had to walk 7 miles just to get to school and back every day.
Right.
Like, you might feel like you have it bad here. And, that's not to take away from anyone's pain. But relatively, outside of the States in so many places, it's so extreme. And it's such a rare instance in which someone could go from rags to riches. And that when you get here, you can taste it, you can feel it, it's palpable, and you want to get after it, even though you'll have to face more barriers than, say, your white male counterparts, it still is attainable. And I can say fairly confidently that, I wouldn't have had the opportunities that I had in front of me had I not been blessed with, just immigrant parents instilling that DNA into me, and then being in a playground, so to speak, where you can really put that to the test, and the limit is really the reciprocal amount of your effort. And so it's been amazing. It's been amazing. And I think it's a really big part of why a lot of immigrants can lock in and succeed.
Yeah, I love that. Because I also believe that we have different context and different mm-hmm. perspective to life. And we have been either personally or through stories, and our parents have also almost lived through the difficulties that they have. Right. Mm. The not having the opportunity. So we tend to also somewhat overcompensate because we know we're behind the eight ball. And in doing so, not having the resources that most people do. I know when I was in high school and I was, you know, I came to this country when I was 14. So I got to high school and didn't even speak any English. So knowing how far behind I was, and that the fact that I was not going to have the same opportunities as everyone else, not even to my other immigrant counterparts. You look at your own parents and you see how resourceful they were and they've been in order to survive. And that resourcefulness sort of also applies to you. So my next question is, I get this question all the time, which is, well, how did you do that? Like, how did you have the money, or how did you know so-and-so, and how did you make that happen? How did you? And I always come back to resourcefulness. You have to think outside the box. Talk to
that
me
was the
a
first
little...
word that came to mind, actually. Was
yeah, when talk you, to me a little bit that? About that.
And it's, you know, I think people overestimate the amount of resources you need to make something happen. It's... oftentimes, you know, when I speak to folks and, you know, they're on the ground floor and they're looking to start, they'll place all kinds of things in front of them. These are self-prescribed things that they feel they need. And so, you know, because the prospect is so daunting of getting started, so then you say, well, surely it must take money. Surely it must take this. Surely. And, you know, people don't even realize that these are all constructs of your mind that you place in front of you.
Right.
And so here I am, I just sidestepped all that. And I realized, like, you know, at first I was paralyzed by that as well. I was like, damn, you need this. Like, there's no way. And for me, it took meeting someone who came from where I come from that did it and showed me, bruh, all you need is a little bit of creativity, a little bit of hustle, a little bit of shaking and jiving, and you can get in position. And so that's why I'm really big on that's why I produce content, because you can't be what you can't see.
Oh, and that's so good. You can't be what you can't see. Ooh, that's so good. Was this when you were working as a doorman in New York?
For sure. Okay. I was working as a doorman and I was exposed as well, but it just never felt like it was for me because I wasn't seeing anyone who came from my background. So what happens is when you see people outside of your background that are successful, you, at least I did, you know, I fell into this trap, which is justifying it. Like, well, they got a degree from here. Well, you find all the reasons why it can't be you until you finally meet someone who comes from where you come from your circumstances or worse off, and makes it. And then you say, and then it hits you that you really have no excuse. And so that is why I produce content. It's expensive to produce content, you know, as much as I do and blah, blah, blah. But like, for me, it's been really critical for me to show kids, hey, I dropped out of school my first semester. I didn't do college. You know, I come from a family that grew up below the poverty line. You know, we inherited every kind of bad habit, bad financial habit you can think of. And yet still, you're able to break through. And that's because it doesn't take as much as you think. So I guess to answer, that's my answer in an abstract way. But in a concrete way, what I would say is, you got to find something to lock in on. And that's really the beginning of how my journey and other journeys begin to take off. You got to find something that you can lock into and start. It serves as the vehicle by which you improve your own self and your habits. And it's less about making money in the beginning. It's more about the person you become as you seek to perfect this craft.
Right. On that note, what I do want to talk about is you made a really great point in locking in on something, but that could also be dangerous because if you have perfectionist paralysis, then you tell yourself, well, I don't know what I want to do. And you can, before you know it, you've spent 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 9 months, you know, a year or 10 years and trying to figure out what that perfect thing is supposed to be. And people ask me all the time, how did you do this or how did you accomplish this and how did you start? And I just always tell them, just start something.
Yeah.
Just begin.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what I didn't say was find the perfect thing to lock into. What I just said was find a thing to lock into. And
love that.
It can be scary because you never know if you're choosing the right thing, if you're wasting your time, if you're barking up the wrong tree. But, you know, for me, it's more about, you know, in the ground stages of getting your, you know, career going and what have you, you got to hone skills. And you don't hone skills reading about stuff. You just don't. So for me, the perfect starting place, in my opinion, is not necessarily finding the perfect thing to start on. It's just finding something that captures your imagination, that gets you excited, and that you feel like you could contribute to this thing because it's kind of naturally playing off some of your strengths. And you don't have to. In fact, I think if you worry about, you know, monetizing it to start, I think it can suffocate the seed of the thing that you're looking to grow. Because then you think it's got to be a business, and then you're thinking about formations and all this other stuff. But in reality, you know, it's about just like the person you become when you nurture a vision that you have in your mind. You know, like, let me see what happens when, you know, I make this a little bit cooler, or, you know, and then you just tweak it. And so that is the groundwork of you developing your skill, you're honing your perspective. And before you know it, just you, you know, having contributed yourself to this thing, it gets to the point where someone says, damn, you're pretty good at that. Hey, have you ever considered doing this? Or, you know, I'd love to pay you to do it. And before you know it, you're on your way to increasing your earning power, which has been absolutely crucial to my career. And it's what helped me kind of break out of, you know, being locked into what someone else says my time is worth versus locking in on a skill or a vehicle or a craft or whatever, and you hone it. You spend some time being unpaid for it, so you got to find a way to make it work in that meantime, whether it's your job's holding you down, whether you take a step back and you live more frugally, or whether you work damn near free, if not completely. But find some way to make it work so that you can hone your craft. And if you can lock in for 12 to 18 months, I promise you, your next 12 to 18 months will have a substantially increased quality of life. And that's what people aren't willing to do. They're not willing to lock in for a year to 2 years. I didn't say 2 years. In my opinion, I think it's more like 2 years. I just didn't want to scare anyone listening. But in my experience, every time I've locked in for 2 years, the next 2 years, I've lived on a different level.
Yeah. You know, so much of this game is mindset, right? Mm-hmm. So much of this hustle, so much of entrepreneurship, so much of making it, whatever that means for you, whether it's monetary or lifestyle or time, whatever it means, is mindset. And it is about taking a step back. Sometimes you are required to downsize. Mm-hmm. And it is so difficult for
humbling.
It is humbling, and it's difficult for a society like ours where social media is so has so much influence and so much control that people tend to lose the bigger picture and the big vision of what am I sacrificing for in this next 18 months or 2 years in order to be somewhere else. So vision, mindset, which comes back to what you said, the importance of surrounding yourself with people who then understand and support that. So talk to me a little bit about that, because coming from an immigrant family, an immigrant community, I know that in my journey, in my vision, in my path, people didn't just look at me sideways. People, I mean, were brutal in the process. Talk to me about that. With it,
for sure. And that's the thing. So look, our parents did the best they could with what they got. And, you know, I understand their pressures. Like you move here and, you know, you want your kids to have the next step up from what they had, which usually means, hey, you know, anything that has any degree of uncertainty, you know, you don't want that for your kids because you just don't want them to go through that pain. And so you coerce them to want to go down these, you know, really fixed paths. And so along with that, to your point, does come a mindset, unfortunately, of, you know, of scarcity, like, hey, listen, you don't want to, you know, you can't trust people, this and that, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, hey, you got to play it safe. And so I didn't realize until I got started on this how much of that I absorbed and how much of that I was programmed into believing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it got to the point where anytime you're kind of breaking out and you're starting to get a little bit of traction in your craft, your own programmed beliefs of what you believe is possible for you, you know, auto-correct your, you know, your upward transcendence into like more like what's normal for you. And so
it suppresses the risk that you're willing to take.
For sure. Yeah. And you brought up a great point around, hey, well, you know, surround yourself with positive people. I would go as far as to say I would surround myself with no people. And that's far better than surrounding yourself with people that reinforce that negative mindset, even if it means it's your family. And that's the painful part. For instance, I can remember when I started becoming really sensitive and aware about the thoughts that I was thinking. This is the first time I really like was deciding I was going to lock in. I was really going to start this business. And I was auditing the thoughts that I was thinking all the time. And I started cutting things out, anything that didn't serve it. And I started realizing like the news was always on in my house, in my mom's house. And it was just like killing, raping. I was like, let me cut that out. Mm-hmm. A lot of the music that I was listening to was not serving my purpose. So I was, how far are you willing to go to lock in on your craft and get a better life for yourself? So that music that I love, there was a time I just had to cut it out. And yet these thoughts were persisting and I realized, oh my gosh, it's my own family that is constantly saying, hey, you know, they're just, it's just the constant bickering and the tone and the energy. And I was like, I was willing to pay the price of saying, you know what, guys, I got to go away for a little while
right.
and go and rent the room in a dark, dingy apartment that, you know, is certainly not as comfortable as my mom's crib with my right. mom's cooking and all that stuff. But I was willing to go to the extreme length to isolate myself. And I'd rather be with no one. To give myself the space to foster my own new paradigm that I was building. Because when it's new, when you're first building this new paradigm for yourself, it's fragile. And any negative influence is going to, you know, destruct it mm-hmm. easily.
Right.
And so I locked in. And once I emerge as more mature in my own thinking and my confidence as my new self, then I went and sought more positive reinforcement. And now I'm at the point where, you know, I've got my family to come all the way around because now they look to me for, hey, you know, show us how to do things.
Right.
So it's funny how it comes full circle, but not unless you're willing to pay the price.
Yeah. Because, you know, uncertainty is what they've experienced. And I too am empathetic and compassionate to the journey, but you know, a lot of immigrant families have been in survival mode for so long. And mm-hmm. with the unrest and the movement that we're seeing, a lot of communities of color have, and minorities have been in the survival mode economically for so long that mm-hmm. anytime you put yourself in a position where nothing is guaranteed, right? Every 2 weeks, you're not getting a check and the job is not guaranteed. It tends to... I think reactivate that deep rooted trauma that they've experienced in life. And it's so important.
That's a great word, reactivate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the reality is it's in you too, because you said you have your own programming and the awareness of that makes a huge difference. And the ability to know that you have the power to change that is also something that I think we downplay and people don't understand and don't realize how much power they do have over mm-hmm. their thoughts, over their environment. I always say, what are you willing to do to get what you want?
What you say you want.
What
right.
you right. What are you willing to do? What are you willing to pay the cost? Everybody wants X, Y, and Z, but you know, I paid a very specific price for that. Are you mm-hmm. willing to do the same?
I'm Silva Harapetian. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.